2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast presented to you by DFSArmy.com. It's time to start off another season of PGA Tour golf, and it's looking about as good as ever with Tiger going out on top and all of these young studs, a bunch of really big names up and coming. It's going to be another amazing season. Golf is in such a good place right now, and remember, if you want to follow us throughout the PGA Tour season and get access to all of our premium tools and articles, check out DFSArmy.com and use promo code TACO on sign up for a lifetime 10% off. You get access to every daily fantasy sport, the research station, again, loaded with every sport that FanDuel and DraftKings have out there. We do some amazing work with NFL, NBA, the NASCAR season's coming up in about a month. Of course, the golf season starting just now and won't end until October. I mean, it's pretty much a full year-round sport, and every week we're breaking it down, got it broken down from every angle. The research station, which is loaded to the brim with all the statistics you could ever need to help make golf decisions, and the Domination Station Lineup Optimizer to help you mass multi-enter. And of course, VIP members, you get access to the Chalk Donkey article, which is really good work done by my friend Josh, DFS Up North. It's a must-read every week, and you'll want to join us to get access to all of this, the Research Station, everything. For every major sport, again, really good deal that you're getting here at DFS Army. All the other guys are really, really good at what they do, and you can get a 10% lifetime discount. Just use promo code TACO on sign up using the link in the description below, and that will support the pod. You can also check out our sportsbook offering, Beat the Bookie, which will help you through the ever-expanding world of sports betting as it's legalized state through state throughout the near future. Without further ado, let's get into the Sony Open here. It's in Hawaii, Wailai Country Club, against one of the beginning tournaments of this West Coast swing. Last week at Kapalua, we were in Hawaii already. So some of the guys have already been here. You're getting a lot of your web.com tour graduates going into this field. Not a lot of the big names are here, only a handful of pretty big names. Most of them are on the younger end, and usually your big veterans will kind of wait until the California part of the West Coast swing before they really come out and start playing events. But you have some decent names in here: Justin Thomas, Bryson DeChambeau, Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed, Hideki Matsuyama. That's pretty much it for the household name type golfers here. You've also got Leishman, Woodland, and Cameron Champ. A lot of the young up and coming guys are Cam Smith, Emiliano Grillo's. It's not as bad of a field as it had been in years previous, but it's not going to be the strongest field by any event. We're going to have to wait until like Farmers, Pebble Beach, the Arnold Palmer, before we start getting some really strong fields before, of course, the major season, which starts in April or so. So looking at Wailai Country Club, it's not going to be all that similar to Kapalua, which we were at last week. The only thing similar there is that the average scoring standard deviation, really the difference in strokes between everyone each round. Last week, Kapalua was ranked number one. and the lowest in that number by a pretty good amount. A lot of the guys just score pretty damn similarly, and this course would rank second out of 70 events. So there's something about these Hawaiian courses that just really lead to predictable and evenly distributed scoring. I'm not really entirely sure why that's the case. I mean, those are the only two Hawaiian golf courses on the PGA Tour, but they seem to really stick out in that measure for whatever reason, so don't expect too many wild discrepancies, I guess, just compared to usual. Looking at the course itself, it's only 7,000 yards, a par 70. It's got tons of par 4s. You got 11 on the course, with 10 of them being over 420 yards. Well, technically 418 yards if we're going off of this year's pin sheets, but I don't know. It's really not all that different of a course compared to some others. I mean, par 4 scoring, you know, about every course has roughly half the course that's par 4s. This one's just a little bit more than that. Really, it doesn't really change what you look at each week. Each week when you go on the research station, you're really just going to look at the projected course score, which takes all of the different hole types into account, and then calculates, you know, their average fantasy points per hole at each given hole type or hole type, and adds them up into, you know, one solid number. The numbers are on the lower end this week, obviously, with the lack of par fives, but you'll mostly look at that stat there. You know, Justin Thomas leads with an expected 17.5 fantasy points just from raw scoring expected during one round of golf. 17.5, it's not very much. You usually see people hit around 18, 19, 20 when there's some par fives on the table. So, I mean, even though this is a pretty easy course, the raw fantasy point numbers won't really get all that high. Last year, players averaged about 67 fantasy points overall. It's not very much. We're coming off of a bunch of no-cut events where people score a lot higher than that. So, you know, if you're looking at the projections last week and this week, obviously they're a lot different because there's actually a chance to miss the cut. You know, we're going to want to actually look at stats like a made cut percentage from last year and, you know, things like that. Something I had said last week and you're going to want to pay attention to this week is just, you know, guys haven't been playing events lately. They just haven't. You've got some guys coming in with a month or two where they've only played like one or two events. You got guys like Bubba that haven't even played in America since the Tour Championship and played last week and just did horribly. And we're not going to really know what to do with these guys. You can't just avoid everybody. The few plays that do stick out are really going to be targeted by a lot of people. So, you know, you kind of want to look at some longer term stats and just try to make six guys through the cut. If you can get six guys through the cut on DraftKings or FanDuel, you're going to really be looking good. I just feel like a lot of the ownership is going to get concentrated on some guys lately. That's just something I've been noticing happening more and more as of late. You know, last week we really saw guys pile on to just a few names up at the top, and they're extremely overowned compared to everybody else. Granted, they all did pretty darn well, like Leishman and Woodland and Champ last week were all really popular, all finished like top 10, top 11. You know, Woodland almost won the thing as the chalk. So it's like the trend with PGA Tour golf on daily fantasy, like DraftKings especially, the chalk is getting more and more chalky, but it's also getting better, really. That's just something I kind of noticed from last year. I know we've had situations like when Hideki Matsuyama was trying to three-peat, and he was the chalk, and then he withdraws, and stuff like that. And we've had, you know, of course, your weeks where the chalk just misses the cut. We've had, you know, Joaquin Niemann, who was incredibly popular throughout the swing season. He had some really shaky events. We saw Patrick Reed, who ended up getting really popular last week. He sucked. He was really bad. You'll have things like that, but for the most part, you know, a lot of guys, you're not going to get guys that are just popular, and that's what makes them overowned. We're going to look more and more at contest type as, you know, you should really be deciphering which GPPs are being filled with hand-filled lineups, like your 3 maxes, your single entries, even your 20 entry maxes. Those are likely to be hand-filled, and people are just going to make those differently than the 150 maxes, where optimizers and lineup generators will fill up a good portion, probably more than 50% of that entire field. Those mini maxes on DraftKings were pretty much made for optimizers to go wild. And while sure, I do recommend you use optimizers for it, I just something I've tried to do is just look at those different types of contest and act accordingly. I've grown to reserve a bunch of lineups in different contests, and then like hand build my mini maxes, and then optimize like a bunch of single entries or 20 maxes that I've reserved. Just using the domination station, stuff like that. And, of course, getting away from some of the chalk that you think is not really deserving of being chalk. I mean, I've got a few ideas, but you know, ultimately it is up to you and just rooting interest, you know. I like to take certain guys just because I like them or just because I know the TV is going to follow them and I kind of want to watch them in the coverage. There's nothing really wrong with doing that this week. And we also kind of notice a course history, a lot of course horses here that just do good year after year after year after year. There are several examples of this, guys that not only repeatedly make the cut, but repeatedly post top 20 finishes. You know, looking at Woodland, Kisner, Howell, Zach Johnson, Kuchar, Harman, Reavy. I mean, lots and lots of guys here just riding crazy form, like Jerry Kelly. Since the turn of the decade here, he's got 4 top 10s, 14th last year. You know, Brian Stewart with 3 top 6s in his last 5. You see a lot of that just compared to a normal tournament. It's sort of like, it's not as bad as like a John Deere, but it's up there as far as tournaments where course history seems to have an apparent effect and the same guys do well each year. So these are all just things we're going to be looking at as far as the course goes. For statistics, approach sticks out here a little bit more than usual. This course ranks 2nd out of 70 in approaches taken from 150 to 175 yards. So you can look at some stats from that range. Also, it's bottom 2, or it has the 2nd lowest number of wedge shots taken. Now, of course, these stats are excluding handful of courses where we didn't have shot link data from, but from all the ones that we did have data from, again, just had the lowest amount of wedges. I wouldn't look into that too much, just pointing out the interesting parts of this course. Driving accuracy is kind of optional here. You know, last week you had, you know, the course with some of the highest driving accuracy and greens regulation numbers just due to its wonky setup and humongous greens, humongous fairways. It's not the case this week, but the rough is not very penal, and guys usually have no problem with bombing it away and just taking out the rough if need be. There's no real, I mean, there is a reason to hit the fairway. It's just not, again, like I said, it's just not as penal. What you really want to do are hit these greens. The approach game is going to be slightly more important than usual. It's the most important stat. It literally like correlates the like strokes gained approach correlates with success at pretty much every tournament. It's like the number one stat to use. So, you know, like I say, pretty much every year, pretty much every week I do a podcast. I'm going to sound like a parrot on repeat every week saying look at strokes gained approach. But, you know, you got to, at this point, we're just looking at it and how much approach should we be looking at and compared to usual? Usually the answer is a lot. This week it is one heck of a lot. We're also going to want to look at putting. It's a little bit more important than usual. I know that it's something that's usually best left avoided or even, you know, somewhere where you target the guys that have been putting bad. And while there's still merit to that, that's usually more of a showdown strategy. It does seem like good putters have actually done pretty well here. And the reason for them doing well here is their putting on the course. So be that for what it may, I'm never going to get too into guys that are just good putters. Just this week, I'm not going to see it as a negative, and I'm actually going to see it as quite the positive, especially if they've got good splits on Bermuda. Again, like I had said, long-term stats, so, you know, last year's season-long adjusted field ranks are going to be a really good stat to look at, just to get a nice overview of, you know, how good people have played. And they also threw the West Coast splits on there, just from last year, so you can see who tore this part of the country up. And a lot of the time, you know, the same sort of guys, your Howells, your Brendan Steeles, they really do so much better on the West Coast, Bermudas and Poa Nui Greens and stuff, than they do in other parts of the country. And you see the same sort of thing with the Florida guys. You see the same sort of thing with the Texas guys. It's just an interesting way to look at different splits here. Yeah, that's pretty much how I'm going to be going about it. As far as form, you know, swing season form from last week, like I had told people with the Tournament of Champions last week, statistics and form, the importance of it going into the week is probably at the lowest point it'll be all season. You know, with statistics, you're about to get sort of messed up with the tournaments, with the multiple courses, with some of them having shot link data and some not. But right now it's pretty confounded. Not only do we have the weeks where we have no data from anyone because nobody was playing anything, but we've also got, you know, a lot of guys with low to no data from the web.com tour. And you had your events like Mayakoba that didn't have a shot link. Same with WGC China, I do believe. So, you know, data's not looking too hot right now as far as just, you know, if shot link is not available, there's not much you can do to look at things like strokes gained and all that. But so we're going to want to focus on a little bit longer term of a sample just to get a better sample, but still at least be mindful of who's been playing all right lately. So let's dig right into this field. Up top at $11,000 on DraftKings, you have two dudes, Justin Thomas and Bryson DeChambeau. DeChambeau is actually more expensive on FanDuel for some reason, despite DeChambeau only currently sitting at 9-1 with Justin Thomas sitting at 5-1 odds. So on FanDuel, Justin Thomas is probably going to be overwhelming chalk. On DraftKings, you kind of have to think about it a little bit. I'd still expect Justin Thomas to be very popular. I won here in 2017, 14th last year. Did have the miscut in 2016, but a 6th place finish in 2015. He came off of a pretty long stretch of not playing anything since the last WGC event, and he finished 3rd last week at the Tournament of Champions. And he did it mostly through approach, leading the field by a pretty good amount in strokes gained approach. So that's just Justin Thomas's calling card. He's one of the best. I'd say he's one of the best strokes gained approach artists in the entire field, or in all the PGA Tour. So I'm going to like Justin Thomas pretty much every week. I liked him a whole lot last week, and he's one of the few guys that really helped me get through my Leishman and Woodland fades that really came back to bite me. But yeah, Justin Thomas is the class of this field. I like to just look at the number when it comes to these number one guys. You know, sometimes you're paying 12K for a Dustin Johnson who's like 8-1 or 9-1. 6-1 is about as good as you're going to see all year long. We've seen some guys hit 5-1, like last week, DJ was 5-1. Well, I'm saying 5-1, but really it was 4-1 because it's just a little confusing. When I say to one, it's fractional, so you guys can understand here. But on the research station, I choose the decimal point because it's just easy to look at the number and not have to focus on the over one thing because nobody really gets that high. But Thomas, right now his odds are at 6, so it's 5-1. And you don't really see many people get lower than that. Last week we had DJ at 5, but that was in a 30-person field. So, you know, we've seen guys hit, about 5. That's like the best I've ever seen anyone at a full field event. So six, I mean, you're getting about as much value as you possibly can from getting or playing Justin Thomas. So it's a really strong move to make. His adjusted field rank over last year in 20 events is 88%. So he beat 88% of the golfers he teed it up against. In the West Coast Swing, he beat 91% of the golfers they teed it up against. He's just really fucking good in comparison to all the guys around him. I would say that Spieth, one of his best friends, might be the only golfer that you could argue is better overall, but Spieth just had a really, really rough year last year. I'm not really showing any form at all. So Thomas, clearly the best play you can make. Last year, he topped 20 in 70% of the events that he played. It is just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. So he's the strongest move you can make, I think. I think he's definitely the way you go up top, either side. On FanDuel, it's going to be more chalky, but it's going to be chalky either way. Just immensely chalky on FanDuel. Bryson DeChambeau. He's 11,100 on DraftKings, like I had said. He's actually the same age as Justin Thomas, even though he came into the PGA Tour a little later than him. For some reason, I'd never thrown age on the research station before. I'm like, why not? I'm actually kind of a little surprised. It's something I haven't really looked at all too much, and it's kind of surprising to see some of the ages on these guys that you thought were a little bit younger but really old, or vice versa. But yeah, Bryson DeChambeau, he got to play here in 2017, came 49th. Nothing too interesting there, but of course we've seen him win countless times over the last year. Four times to be exact. Won at the Northern Trust and then followed it up at the Deutsche Bank Championships during the playoffs on what was, almost an unprecedented run. For a guy so young and so new on tour, and then followed that up by winning the Shriners during the swing season, just for the heck of it. The dude, he was seventh last week, but he was really in contention for most of last week. He's just a beast. He gains so many birdies. He actually gains more birdies to the field than Justin Thomas does. And if it wasn't for a guy named Cam Champ, he'd be number one in this entire field. Now, Bryson did not have the approach numbers that JT had last week at all. He was 23rd in the field out of 34 golfers, as where JT was number one. But he was the number one in one category, which was putting. And surprisingly enough, almost dead last in around the green. So, be that as it may. I'm going to lean Thomas here, obviously, because approach is just a smarter way to attack this than putting. But with Bryson, I really like Bryson last week as well. Him and JT were pretty much my core, because in a no-cut style event, you're going to want the guys that just absolutely gain tons of fantasy points to the field, birdies to the field, are very aggressive, and they're just really, really good at finding the birdies and getting those DraftKings or FanDuel fantasy points up. And these two are the top in the projected course score for the week. So, I mean, they deserve to be the highest price guys. And it's just DeChambeau has just been getting it done through putting. And that was kind of the story for him last year as well. He ended up over his last 50 rounds in the 2018 season. Pretty much almost no one in this entire field was better than what he had put up. He put up 0.6 strokes gained. Putting over the last 50 rounds, which was really, really solid. Over 60% of his rounds were positive in strokes gained. Compare that to Justin Thomas. He's right there at 50%. He's a really good putter, but last week he just couldn't putt well at all. So he's the smarter play to make, obviously. Is what I'm trying to say here. It's just DeChambeau is also very popular with the people, and he has those wins on the board. So his ownership might be pretty similar, and especially on FanDuel, it's just so much smarter to take JT. But I'll just move on here because, I could just harp on take the top guys all day long, which is, it's easy to say that, but you've got to be able to afford them if you're going to be doing that. And I think there are some guys in this 10-9K range here that might even be better plays than those two, even though I've really, really expressed my love for them. Gary Woodland here, over the last 4 years, he's not finished worse than 13th. He's at a 7th, a 6th, and a 3rd in that span as well here at this event. Just really one of those guys that just are really good at this event for some reason. Before those 4 years, he did have a three-year hiatus of playing here. And he missed the cut in 2011. But right now, he's looking about as good as possible. Pretty much, he started last year as one of the best-looking guys statistically. He's making every freaking cut. And then somewhere in the middle of the season, towards the middle end, you know, summertime or so, he really just kind of fell off a cliff and was not good, finishing in the 80s and 90s every week, kind of falling out of relevancy. And then through the swing season here, he's just kind of picked it up a lot. A fifth, a second place finish at the WGC HSBC Championships, where he lost to none other than Xander Schauffele, who he lost to last week. And the dude, if it wasn't for Xander, he'd have two more wins on the board to add on to his win from last year at the, where'd he win at again? It was Waste Management. That's what it was. Thanks to Hideki for dropping out on him so he could win that. But yeah, Woodland, you'd never expect to see him $10,800 or $12,000 on FanDuel, which is kind of crazy. But given his history here, and he should have won last week. He was winning by multiple strokes before Xander just had his incredible 62 on Sunday to steal the win from him. But he's not even that. He's not that far removed from some incredible finishes. A 10th at the Shriners, 12th at the BMW Championship, ended up 11th at the Tour Championship. He's about as good of form as anyone. So Woodland, he's just super expensive, but definitely someone I would have on my radar there. Leishman, the Woodman Leishman, together they were the most popular golfers last week. And like I had mentioned earlier, didn't play him as much because I knew they'd be popular. And boy, did that bite me in the butt. Leishman ended up in fourth. Had some really solid rounds. And the dude always has a really good swing season pretty much every year. Going back, I had that win at the CIMB Classic back in, I think that was October, November. October. And, man, ever since then, I mean, he hasn't really done a whole lot. Played in China again, the HSBC, finished 18th and then 4th at the Tournament of Champions. He's just super, super, super consistent going back several years now. If you take out that one stretch of time where his wife was sick, he's really just been a solid top tier and consistent golfer that you would just throw in your cash lineup every single week. It's just his price has finally caught up to how good he is. And he has a pretty good stretch of course history here. Has some top tens like Woodland, but those are back in 2014, 2013. Hasn't missed the cut since then, but hasn't really done too much like cracking the top 20 then either. Just solid cut making. Made 82% of his cuts in the 2018 season, so he's got a thing for cut making. That's sort of his deal. Top five in approach last week. Forgot to mention that Gary Woodland, he was top eight in every single strokes gained category last week. So, the dude is beasting. Leishman, just his approach game, his putting game was all he needed last week. He was really bad and around the green and off the tee numbers. And fortunately for him, approach and putting are really what we're looking for this week. And his approach game, we've known about it for a very long time. It's very good, very consistent. He'd probably be a cash game target for me, probably. I don't know. I'd probably still go Thomas in cash, but Leishman is someone that I would never say no to in cash. Doesn't really have the odds value. He's 17 right now compared to Woodland's 13, and Spieth underneath him is at 15, but Spieth's form is just in. There's just a lot of questions with it. So let's talk about him real quick. He hasn't played since the Mayakoba Classic where he missed the cut. Really, really shady performance from him there. 55th at the Shriners, 55th at the BMW Championship when he bowed out early. Didn't even make the Tour Championship. Didn't make the Tournament of Championship the Tournament of Champions last week, as he didn't have a win all of 2018. It's a really weird off season for him. The only real positive notes he had from last year were the Masters and the week before it, where he finished third. Other than that, boy, it's been rough. He's still in the quintuple digits here on DraftKings and FanDuel, pretty much out of name recognition alone, the name value, because that's about it. Over the last 25 events, he's played 12 of them, and his adjusted field rank is only 62%. If you compare that to other guys in this range, like Woodland, DeChambeau, Thomas, Champ, those guys are all over 80% in that span. He's at 62%, so he's taken quite the step back. If you look at the whole season last year, 70% adjusted field rank. Justin Thomas's was at 88%. Just a huge difference there. I guess it's safe to say that he's fallen off some. But I don't know if this is the new normal or it's just him, you know, just having a bad year. I mean, we've seen guys have bad years. We've seen Stenson back in like 2010-ish, I think. Paul Casey back in like 2012-ish. Bubba Watson just 2 years ago, really. This last year almost. You see guys just go through really weird off years and either they bounce back, which is usually the case, or they just kind of fade away into obscurity from there, and I really don't see Spieth fading away into obscurity. I think he could easily turn things around. When? I don't know. And am I going to be playing him until that point? I don't think so, but I'll eagerly be waiting. He actually drove the ball 300 yards on average when you adjust for the field last year, so it's not like he's short. He's not the short dinker and dunker that people made him out to be. He's definitely ready for, you know, the future of this game, which is all based around driving distance. Not so much as some of the other guys, you know, that we speak of in the same breath as him, but I'm just gonna be sitting and waiting with Spieth. He's gonna be low owned all the time, sure, but I'll wait until his form is really solid before going in on him too much. He is also the same age as Justin Thomas and Bryson DeChambeau, though. So, even though he's been around for longer and has been on the stage for a lot longer of time, he's no older than these guys. He's still very young, only 25 years old. And speaking of young guys, we're getting into the $9,000 range here with Cameron Champ, $9,900, $11,600 on FanDuel. The dude's a monster. 334 yards off the tee, adjusted driving distance, just absolutely sickening. You know, last week I had mentioned that the 12th and 7th hole at Kapalua were responsible for 6 of the 7 longest drives in the entire 2017 season, or 2018 season. And I think it was the 12th hole last week where he hit a drive that was like 419 yards. Just insane. The dude is a monster. He wallops the ball. Like he would make Dustin Johnson look bad at driving the ball. That's like the kind of skill we're working with here. It's like Trey Mullinex, but he might actually really be good. Looking at the numbers, stroke scan for him, you know, 15th off the tee and 16th in approach last week. He really is somebody that you want to play at Bombers courses. He gets all of his work done off the tee, sort of like a Keith Mitchell. But he really does have good Bermuda grass splits in his very, very young career. So that can't really hurt him there. Right now he's projecting out as one of our best values, despite being 25-1 on the odds books compared to Spieth 15, Leishman 17-1. And the reason is the dude gains 4.6 birdies to the field in every event he plays. Like, it's crazy. The dude is a monster. He's gaining over 18 fantasy points per event. He's always going to do better in fantasy scoring than actual scoring. Definitely one of those guys. Like, he screams GPP. Very popular last week, of course, and an 11th place finish out of 34 guys isn't really all that great, but people will still look at the the game log and go, holy crap, 1st, 28th, 10th, 6th, 11th. That's awesome. And it's pretty good. I mean, it's very good for a rookie. I'd definitely say that. You know, he's, you know, I'm kind of in the hype wagon along with you guys. I want to see him do really well. But, you know, the only thing he did last week well was putt. He was 4th in putting. And that's not really what you want to attack here. I mean, it's nice that you're putting well. But I don't know. So Patrick Reed, he's a guy I'm not very interested in here. $9,600, 11-1 on FanDuel. Yeah, right. He was almost dead last in both putting and approach last week. 30th and 31st in those categories, which is a reasonably big yikes. Fairly big yikes. He was 7th at the Sanderson Farms, the only event that he played during the swing season. And other than that, I mean, 25th out of 34 golfers last week, and 28th at the Tour Championship, which was almost dead last. He had that swing, you know, during the major season last year where he was just incredible, top 10 after top 10 after top 10. Since then, it's been dicey, you know. Season-long, his adjusted field ranked 72%. But over the last 15 events where he's played 7, that's at 63%. You know, it's not very good. Not as bad as Spieth's in that span, which is 59%, but it's still not very good compared to what you could, you know, some of the guys that you could afford with this amount of money here. You've even got Cameron Smith, who's $200 cheaper, and his odds are even better than him right now. So with Reed, not quite interested. Cameron Smith, still not very interested. I know he has like a real knack for these top five, really like top three finishes. He loves to come in like third or second. It's the thing with him. You know, he could do that, but he also misses a ton of cuts. You know, only made the cut in 69% of his events last year. Nice. But yeah, he recently won in Australia, I do believe, the Australian PGA Championship, which, you know, he should win that. Him or Leishman should win that, really. I think, what was it like? I think Jordan Spieth almost won that, or he won that a few years ago or something. I don't really know. But yeah, Cam Smith, if you're going to play him in GPP. He's getting some line movement. Of everyone 9,000 and above, he's gotten by far the most line movement of anyone. It's gone from 28 to 26 as it stands right now. He made the cut here in his last 2 years, finishing 18th and 27th, which is pretty good. The missed cut in 2016 when he was a wee lad. You know, I don't really worry about that too much. He hasn't played in about a month, I think, since the Australian PGA Championship, I'm pretty sure. But, you know, he's just a guy in this range. That's how I see it. I don't think he's going to be terribly popular. One thing I do want to point out is in 4 events in the West Coast Swing last year, his adjusted field rank percentage, 84%. That's really good. That's the fourth best. Well, if you take out the guys with only 1 or 2 events played, he'd be the 3rd best in this entire field. So that's something to look at there. Hideki Matsuyama, $9,300. It's sort of like Spieth, where he's there kind of on name alone. He had a bad year last year, but he did finish the year pretty damn good. 4th in the Tour Championship, 4th in the Deutsche Bank Championship, 15th the BMW Championship, 15th at the Northern Trust. That's one hell of a playoffs right there. You know, 18th at the WGC event and 30th at the Sanderson Farms. That's just mediocre. But this is a weird course for him. He had missed 4 straight cuts here until he played here in 2017, finished 27th. Now, it's pretty easy analysis to just say, like obviously don't play him on FanDuel, where he's 11,300. That's nuts. You could play him in GPPs here. It doesn't have, like, Vegas odds value. And really, you don't really want to be playing Matsuyama until, well, I'd say the waste management, but after last year, I don't know. But the thing I do like about him is that he ended the year by being just a god strokes with all things strokes gained approach. So that's what I've got to go with Matsuyama here. And I do like how his extremely strong playoff run is completely omitted in the current DraftKings game logs. So that's something to take advantage of there. So I have no problem with him in GPP. Not going to be a cash game play by any means, because he's still not coming off the best of years. And some of that was due to injury, but still, you got to wait a little bit. I know that this time last year, Matsuyama was like the best golfer in the world, just torching it up. Just gonna proceed with a little bit of caution with Matsuyama, at least to start off the year. Griot at $9,200, $9,900 on FanDuel, makes him one of the first really good FanDuel plays I'll mention. I will go back up briefly and say Leishman is a very good value price on FanDuel, but he also might be like hella chalk, so there's that. Griot, what can I say? The dude made 90% of his cuts last year. So good. And he does it through the putter. He does it through his approach game. You know, that's kind of what I outlined here. He's someone that people really like to roster a lot. And if you ever play a site like Draft, you'll know that he's always like perpetually overpriced there. So I can never get him on that site. So I usually play him on DraftKings to make up for that. Same with Woodland. But kind of digress a little bit there. It's 47th and 33rd the two times he's played this event. That's okay. But just looking at his proprietary numbers here, 44% of the time in his 25 events played last year, he finished top 20. That's really good. With a 90% made cut rate, he's definitely a strong cash play in my book. Casey, $9,100, 11K on FanDuel. Dude's 41, just throwing that out there. 16th last week, which would make his, that would make his fifth straight top 20. Actually, shoot, if you go back to the Deutsche Bank Classic and overlook the withdrawal from the BMW Championship, it's his sixth straight top 21. But you know, those numbers aren't really quite as strong when you look at them in context. You know, at the Tournament of Championships and the Tour Championship. You know, those fields had like 30 people in it at the HSBC WGC event and the CIMB Classic. Those fields had like 70 people in it. So if you just go by the numbers, Casey's looking, oh, cool, top 20s. Look at all these top 20s in a row, but it's really overrated. You know, he go back a little bit farther and look at his season. He had the first like rough season that he's had in quite some time, at least 5-6 years. It's been he was an elite tier golfer, maybe not elite, but right the step before elite, and he's kind of priced that way this week. But I think he's probably fallen a step back, sort of like how I'd say how Kuchar was last year. But I mean, Kuchar's looking kind of strong right now with the wind and everything. And Casey was one of those guys. Like a Howell, Phil Mickelson, who am I thinking of here? Frick. You know, he's just one of those guys. Oh, like Kuchar, that is usually someone that doesn't get any wins. You know, they post a ton of top tens. Either they don't win or they haven't won in several years. And last year, it was like it was just the year of those guys winning. You saw Casey winning. You saw Kuchar winning. You saw Phil Mickelson winning. You know, all these guys that are just classified as non-winners. They're all out there winning tournaments now. And since that bubble's kind of burst through, I mean, who knows with Paul Casey here. But, you know, he hasn't shown anything at this event in years past. And, I don't know, he just doesn't really have the upside for me. He only played one West Coast Swing event last year, and I barely made the cut. And that was it. So I don't know. I'm not huge on Casey, although usually that's my dude. So hopefully he just keeps it rolling. But right now I'm just kind of I'm kind of leaning towards his game log being overrated. So rolling through this 8K range here, let me briefly hit on Kevin Kisner here. He's $9,000, 9.6 on FanDuel. Fourth and fifth here in 2017, 2016, with three missed cuts the year before that, 25th last year. 7th at the RSM Classic, which is a big jump back, but God, he had such a rough season last year. Like, season-long adjusted field rank, 53%. That is scrub level. Like, seriously, scrub level. But it's like, I do recall the few events where he had really, really, really good course history at, he actually performed decently there. Everywhere else, he was just tragic. You know, he made only 58% of his cuts, and this is pretty sad, but only 14% of his events played, he had top 20 finishes. And that is not like Kisner of, Kisner of 2017, 2016. That guy was constantly coming second. He loved coming second a lot. But, he's just really overrated in price here right now, and it's because of the course history. If I'm playing course history, it's not going to be Kisner at 9,000. I'm going to save $100. It's going to be the play of the week, and I know he's, right now he's sitting at the second highest odds drifts, so he's gone from 28 to 25. That's Mr. Charles Howell III, Chucky Three Sticks, Mr. Charles Howell, and he recently won at the RSM Classic just two events ago, just a couple months ago. He just broke through, won in a playoff, something that honestly shocked me. I know he had the second place finish. I can't remember where that was, but last year he had that second place finish. And again, it was at a course where he had extremely good course history at. And if there's any dude that likes to perform at places where he has good course history at, like Charles Howell is the definition of a guy that's a course horse at many different courses too, mind you. Like early on in the season, he's a guy that just loves to start like 13 for 13 in made cuts. Last year, four West Coast events played, 83% adjusted field rank. That's what, fourth, fifth best in this entire field as far as that split goes. The dude's just a cut making machine when he wants to. He basically pays for the bills early on and then heads on his yacht for the second half of the season and doesn't really care. And he's been doing that for like 15 plus years now at this point. Dude is solid and consistent, but he's not even 40 yet. He's just been grinding. He's probably way up there in career money, I guarantee. He's just a cut-making machine. If you look at this event, it's not really any different. Since 2012, he's yet to miss the cut, and in that span, he's at a second, a third, eighth, another eighth, and 13th. And if you go back past his missed cut in 2011, go back a couple years further there, there are a couple more top fives thrown in as well. So he is just extremely good at this course. Now, last year, he was, like, seriously mispriced, like, in the 7Ks, and he got, like, 30% ownership and was just fine. It was him and Walker that was the chalk, and then, of course, Walker blew up. But we'll talk about him later. Howell, he's pretty much as cash money as you can get of a play. In cash games, you better lock him in. That just makes obvious sense right there. He's sitting on really good line value right now, so in any, in entries, $5, $10 or more dollars, the expensive ones, he's going to have some seriously heavy ownership. So just be prepared for that. Same goes for cash. But yeah, he's my favorite play of the week. Definitely. I love that guy. I love playing him early season because it's just, it works every single year. It works. It's like just taking KJ Choi at the Genesis. It's just going to work until it doesn't. But so far, it's still just working. So I'm going to keep doing it. Abraham Answer at $8,800. Good value over on FanDuel at $9,300 over there. Missed the cut in his only appearance here last year, but besides that, he's had so many good finishes recently. 7th at the Deutsche Bank Classic, 5th at the CIMB Classic, 4th at the Shriners, most recently 21st at the Mayakoba. Dude's riding some good form. The only thing that really strikes me is his finish at the WGC HSBC Championship, where he finished like dead last. That was weird, but that's a Mexican in China, so that's probably not the most familiar of locations for him. And again, we are in Hawaii, where he's never made a cut either, so yeah. Anyway, he's appropriately priced or so. He has line value right now compared to Stanley, who's right underneath him, but I'm going to just hop on Stanley here because I really like this play. He's finished It came out 10th here last year, 13th in 2016. Just really someone that rode under the radar for a good portion of last year. But the year before that, he really stuck out statistically, especially with his stroke scanned approach. We didn't see that last year, but kind of made him, well, we did actually. No, I was looking at the wrong guy. I was looking at Zach Johnson, who was disappointing last year with his approach game. But nope, Stanley was just more of the same. Just bad putting from him. And luckily, he's actually a much better putter on Bermuda than he is normally. So Kyle Stanley, someone I really do like. He's definitely more of an accuracy than a distance guy. That doesn't really matter as much here this week as it would most other weeks. Solid in greens and regulation. Adjusted. He's always up there in that regard. Anything that has to do with approach proximity, he's really good at. It's just a really good week to take him, in my opinion. Even during his first like little stint here on the PGA Tour back in like 2012, 2013, when he was winning championships before what I assume was like his injury that took him out for a few years. Even back then, he was making cuts here at this event. It's been a long time since he's missed a cut here. So he's somebody that I'm eyeing. And he also has just a really strong average field strength from last year. And despite that, he's still able to put up some pretty good numbers. There was a stretch, if you go back, there's a little bit of a stretch sort of in the early summer where he wasn't doing that great. But other than that, he had a really, really strong year, and I'd like to continue using him on through the season as long as he doesn't fall off a cliff here. So Kyle Stanley, like him. Zach Johnson, he has really, really strong course history here over the last 5 years. In that span, he has 4 top 15 finishes and 7th most recently at the RSM Classic, but he missed the cut pretty horribly at Mayakoba and at the Deutsche Bank Championship too. He had a really bad time there. Made 84% of his cuts last year. That's kind of his MO. But his approach game, it's kind of gone away from him. He's become reliant on the short game, which usually he's always like top 10 every year in approach. So that's kind of worrying to see from ZJ. He had kind of a year where he made all the cuts, but had like he only finished top 10 in 5% of the times he teed it up, and that's really, really low. So you're looking at a cash game play with like no upside if you pick CJ. Matt Kuchar. Now he's got insane course history, and it's about time he goes back to this course. Since 2011, he has no finish worse than 13th. He has 4 top 10 finishes. Dude is a monster here. I don't know why he's taking the last 2 years off, but it's good to see you back. And we just got a win from you at the Mayakoba Classic. That was out of nowhere. I did not expect Kuchar to win again. I'd always had Kuchar down over Fowler as my best golfer to never win a major. And I assumed he would never win again. He's 40 years old now. It's crazy to think that Casey is older than him, because he looks a lot older than Casey, to be quite honest. Not really. He's $8,500, so the days of Kuchar being in the 7K range, I guess, are kind of in the past now that win. You know, I was kind of on him during the Mayakoba event, but I barely played anything at all, so I couldn't really cash in on that. Last week, he was almost dead last in the field in stroke scanned off the tee, because it was kind of wide open bombers course, and he's Matt Kuchar. But he was 7th in stroke scanned around the green. Just wish I saw better approach stats from him. He kind of tailed off just like Zach Johnson did last year. He's actually negative in stroke scanned approach ever so slightly. But, he's a veteran at this course. He'll know what he's doing. He's a really strong cash gameplay, I guess. I guess there is upside with all these top 10s a dude has here. I'd really just play him for the course history. He's just on that level of play right now. Rolling through here, I've got to get through the rest of this field, so I'm just going to point out some of the guys that really pop out. Right now, Patton Kizzire has drifted more than anyone, started at 37 on Monday, sitting at 34 right now. It's a movement of 9%. He's the defending champion at this course. He did the same thing last week. He was also the highest drifter last week and finished 8th, had a really good tournament, and was the value play that you needed to win, so I don't know what's up with Kizzire. He had those 2 wins early in swing season last year, and of course won this event. And You thought like huge things were coming from him, and then he just fell off a huge cliff. He didn't even make half of his cuts. He was so bad. His driving accuracy was pathetic. He like lost fantasy points to the field on average, despite having two wins in a season. Like, that's really bad. But I guess he's gotten it together recently, and people are just betting on him. And, you know, 15th at the RSM. It's pretty much that in the 8th place finish at the Tournament of Championships. Because everywhere else, all of his other finishes are, like, they're not good. I know that you're going to look and see he's got incredible line value right now, but let me just read some of his form. This is his form from, like, the playoffs and back. This is how bad it is. 21st out of 30 dudes at the Tour Championship. And 61st out of, like, 80 dudes at the BMW Championship. 71st out of 100 dudes at the Deutsche Bank Championship. And then 60th out of 120 dudes at the Northern Trust. It's not good by any means, but it's definitely, it's pretty bad. But then 81st of the PGA Championship, missed the cut. 31st of the WGC, that's, you know, a 60-person field. Then 131st of the Open Championship, 30th at the John Deere, that was pretty decent, I guess. And then 142nd at the Greenbrier Classic, 121st of the Travelers Championship. It's just all miscuts. I could just read off just miscut. But that was the middle of the season last year. He was so freakishly bad. So just mind that going into this week. If you only have looked at the last few weeks, you know, and the odds line, you'd think that Kazire is like the play to make. But you just remember to look back a little bit further than that. He's, unless he just randomly remembered what he had forgotten during most of last season that he had used to win early in the season or something. I don't know. I have no idea, but he's just one of the really confusing plays out there. Another one would be Harmon, same price as him, but way more expensive on FanDuel. He's got incredible history here, like a lot of people. Four straight top 20 finishes for him, fourth last year. And if you recall, this was part of Harmon's incredible run of top 10s during the swing season. And you see so many guys just have these super strong swing seasons and then they don't turn into like anything during the regular season. You know, in the recent years we've seen those swing seasons from guys like Kevin Na and Russell Knox and Graham McDowell. If you remember, he had like multiple wins just like Kazire did in the swing season and then nothing after that. And then this year, a guy that's had a strong swing season like that is Scott Piercy. He had the 5th at the HSBC, 10th at the Shriners, and then the 6th at the Mayakoba Classic. And it made him popular last week. And then he started off just with a horrible round one, ended up 19th overall. Piercy this week, you know, he's also kind of an odds lines guy. But I don't think that his odds value is really that great. I think just the people around him are really overpriced, like Pat Perez. So I think that kind of it's not as good as it seems, really. Like, he's 48 or 47 right now, but I'd probably consider him even in value with guys around him like Kirk or Reavy who are in the 70s. You know, I think I just disagree with the line value on a lot of these guys, especially the ones that have only been playing well, like, very recently and been pretty bad before that, because the guys are just going to bet on people, you know, that have been in a pretty good swing lately. So those guys are sometimes overrepresented with the odds. Moving right along here, just picking some plays out of the 7K range. Sung J.M. is going to get a lot of hype. He's one of the youngest guys in the field, only 20 years old. And if you remember, he started off the swing season with a 4th at the Safeway Open. And has been a pretty popular name since then. Coming in off, you know, one of the grads off the web.com tour who's really, 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 really good. Him, I'd say he almost has as much upside as Champ, sort of, but not quite as much, because Champ has just really shown it lately. M's had kind of some up and down performances, a really bad performance at the CJ Cup, and you know, a 40th at the WGC HSBC Championship, a 60 or 70 man field. That's not really that all that impressive. 73rd at the Mayakoba, but he's someone that just gets, he's going to be popular just because he's a really, really hot name. And his strokes gain stats, from what we've been able to see so far, have looked really good. He gains a lot of birdies too. And then Dylan Fratelli, someone that we've known about in the European Tour for a little while now. We started seeing him last year when the Euros kind of shipped over for the Honda Classic. He's one of those guys that kind of stuck around. Really good overseas, like consistent cut maker and all that, but really inconsistent here in America. We did see him at the Safeway. He finished 25th and 54th at the CJ Cup, but I don't really know what to make of him as a play. And I think Kevin Chui, $7,500. That's a pretty darn good play. Most people are going to realize he's really underrated. He's like one of the top like seven projected guys on draft. So you're probably not, if you play it smart at all, you're never going to have him. So you got to play him on DraftKings if you're doing any cross-site hedging like me. And then another great play in this range, Andrew Putnam, $7,400 there. Hasn't done anything at this event before. Neither has Chui, actually. They've both just had a 69 last year and then missed cuts. But Putnam, someone who's had just really, really strong, really strong form over the last few months. Over the last 25 events, he's played 14 of them with a 70% adjusted field rank. That's really good. Especially for someone that's played so many events in that span. He has one of the best marks there, especially for someone so cheap. He is fourth at the Sanderson Farms Classic. 14th at the Tournament of Champions also. He was one of the other punts you wanted. And that's the guy I went with over Kazire. So I guess it worked out either way. But really cheap this week. And he's going to be overlooked, even though he has the odds value. He's going to be overlooked because there's another guy in this range, Mr. Jimmy Walker, same price, even cheaper on FanDuel. And he's won this event not once, but twice. He won it in 2014 and then followed that up in 2015 and has some other good finishes here historically as well. A fourth in 2011, 13th in 2016. But he's missed the cut the last 2 years and he's been a chalk buster big time. Now, of course, the big news with him, obviously, it's old news at this point that he suffers Lyme disease. And he even gave it to his wife. So that really sucked for him. And we've seen him become less consistent. If you remember a couple years ago when, you know, during DK's younger years, Jimmy Walker was someone who was just safe for cash like every week because he just had a big driver and could putt like better than anyone. He was like the best putter on tour. Now he's kind of wildly inconsistent, which it kind of makes sense given the Lyme disease deal, but, we have seen him do pretty decently at places he's done well, at least, over the last several months. He hasn't played in quite a while, since the last WGC event, and he hasn't played well in even a longer time than that, but he kind of seems to strike out of nowhere. He still has that upside. Like 17% of the time he was finishing top 10 last year, despite him, you know, struggling through a really bad year. So the upside is there. He's going to be popular though. He's so cheap and has that history. So again, that's why I'd go to like an Andrew Putnam there, who was only like 6% owned last week, despite it being like a 30 person field. So, yeah, it's a sign of someone that's a bit under the radar there. And Patrick Rogers also is this price. He's coming off the second place at the RSM Classic. That's really the case for him. Also, there's also Danny Lee, who has the same case, coming off a second at the Mayakoba Classic. He's actually been in some pretty decent form if you look at the, over his last eight events, 79% adjusted field rank. That's really good. Going down to the low 7K range, some guys want to point out Kevin Na, still listed as questionable after withdrawing last week, so you probably don't want to mess with him at all. And yeah, just kind of warning you. But two really good plays I see at $7,200 are Sam Ryder and Ryan Armour. Armour is someone who he actually had a lower made cut percentage than Sam Ryder, but we'll get to Sam Ryder in a second. Armour really is just kind of like a safe, driving accuracy specialist sort of dude. It's a shorter course that kind of plays into his hand a little bit there. And, he's He rates out as one of the better value plays here. Him and Kevin Na are two of the only guys $7,200 or lower that are actually under 100-1 odds. So they kind of stick out a little bit in that regard. And Armour's coming off a 15th at the RSM Classic and a 21st at the Mayakoba Classic. But then if you look at Sam Ryder, he's got some crazy percentages going on. So 17% of his events that he's played, he's finished top five. That's kind of crazy. This is a $7,200 dude, and he just has this top five upside that's just uncanny. He just strikes out of nowhere. He's just like Danny Lee, like, except for he's even better. He had a really tough time at the RSM Classic where he missed the cut. That's his most recent event, but he was third at the Shriners and fourth at the Safeway Open over the swing season. And we can even look farther back and see he was seventh at the Barracuda, second at the John Deere, fifth in Houston. So really, if it's a weaker field, kind of like this one is, he has a chance to not only do well, but be in contention in the top five. So he's going to... He's also got a really, really good strokes gained approach split from, well, pretty much every split of his with approach is good. That's how he gets his work done. So that's someone I'm going to target for sure. Then just going down a little bit further into the lower 7K range. This is where the field starts to get a lot worse, and you really don't need to dip below 7K because they're really, honestly, there aren't guys to really pay up for. None of these 12K guys or not too many of the 10K guys that really demand you take a whole bunch of them. But you've got Jerry Kelly, who has four top 10s, five top 15s over the last decade, which is really good for someone who's 52 years old. So might want to be mindful of his age coming in there. At the same price, got Ryan Blom. He's coming off the fourth at the RSM Classic. Usually has some pretty good approach numbers. No one had better approach numbers last year than Jerry Kelly, though, but that was a small sample size, definitely. Then you've got Jason Duffner, who has some, a ninth place finish in 2016, 18th last year. Really bad season for him, probably the worst of his career ever last year, but, it's such a cheap price, and he's just, as far as names go, he's a lot better than a lot of the other guys down here, that is for sure. Bryce Garnett, who... He wasn't great last week, but he's been pretty good throughout this whole swing season, making a lot of cuts and stuff. At $7,000, that's really cheap. Vaughn Taylor also, just a cheap price for him at $7,000, but that might be more of like a cash game consideration. You've got Killer Keith Mitchell, $6,900. One of the few sub-7K guys I'll actually endorse this week. He's actually coming off a few not-so-great events at the RSM and the Mayakoba Classic, but any of the long-term numbers, if you look at them compared to the field, especially when it comes to gaining birdies, gaining fantasy points, he's significantly better than anyone else in this range that has a sample size. So Keith Mitchell is someone you're going to want to look at. And then Ollie Schneiderjans at $6,900, seventh year last year, and debuted with the 27th in 2017. He has been in really rough form this whole swing season. I'm not gonna lie, it's been bad, but he's a much better golfer overall long term than anyone else in this garbage can range. And there really aren't many more people to report on down here. You've got a lot of your web.com graduates, not a lot of them really. At least in this field, not a lot of them stick out as people to watch out for. There was one person I wanted to mention really quick. Let me find, I want to make sure I pronounce the name correctly, of course. Oh, yeah, it's Shugo Imahira. He's $6,800 coming in from the Japanese tour where he's really good, like incredibly good, always finishing like top 12 or pretty much every event. Winning several events. He actually made the cut here last year. And just someone to think about. He's coming in off of some international success and is actually ranked like 50 something in the world. So just a name to look out for there. Other than that, going much lower than that is going to be really, really risky. Maybe Kramer Hycock, he's got some a little bit of line value going for him. Troy Merritt also, even though he's been really awful at this course, he was putting really well last week and just has a lot better form than a lot of the guys around him. And Scott Langley also at $6,600. He had a few good finishes at the RSM Classic and the Mayakoba Classic, but he also kind of really crushed the Web.com Tour season late last year. But yeah, that'll do it for the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast. First of the year, first of many, hopefully. And looking forward to the rest of the season, breaking things down with you. Gonna keep working on the research station and progressing it. You'll see it evolve even further from last year. It's never going to stay the same. Always going to keep pushing forward, and I'm working on new data sourcing and stuff. And hopefully next week you can get in to see the beginnings of that. Gonna get the simulator pumped out there, and that'll help us a lot. Try to make that more of a focal point of what we're doing throughout the rest of the season. Just got to get all the logistics in place and everything. And yeah, if you want access to, again, like I had said, if you want access to all of our premium research articles and tools, the Research Station, Domination Station, for not just golf, but all the major sports during the entire season, come get a really cheap membership to DFSArmy.com. Just check us out, DFSArmy.com, and use promo code TACO on sign up for an additional 10% off. And that would support the pod greatly, and I promise you will not regret it. It's a really awesome community to be a part of, and we've been really big winners. You've probably seen our helmets all over the DraftKings contest if you've been around for a little while. We're all over the place, and you should just join up, join the ranks. It's a fun place to be. You'll love it here, and we do good work, make good content, so I will see you guys next week for the career builder next week, so that shall be fun. And I'll see you guys then, later.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.